I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me here. It's been a wonderful conference, and I feel like I've learned a lot. And I'd also like to dedicate this talk to the two birthday boys, Ola Bradley and Akitaka Kishida. Okay, happy birthday. The next thing I should say
is that this is a joint talk with, this is based on joint work with Abe Sims and David Pack. I don't really expect people to understand what the title is all about. I'll explain all the notation. And unfortunately, that's going to probably take at least half the talk to say what I'm actually talking about. But I think it's worth wading through this plethora of definitions.
Yes,
what?
Then the talk will be much shorter.
All right, but that would be lose half the fun. So we'll start off with an axiom. And the action is that C-star algebras that count arise from higher rank graphs are interesting. Okay, so what? I'm being a little silly, obviously.
Higher rank.
Give rise to interesting. Okay, so the main purpose of having this action is that I don't want to entertain questions about the usefulness of what I'm talking about. I guess that's also being a little bit facetious, because I will be happy, of course, to talk about them. There are many, many examples. Unfortunately, Andrew Tom's examples do not fall in this class, as far as I can tell. It would be very interesting if they do, but I think it would take a lot of work to do it. Okay, so let me... start off by giving you a short abstract of what it is that I plan to talk about. And the basic idea is I'm going to talk about a K-morph. The basic idea is that a K-morph should be thought of as some kind of a morphism in a category between K-graphs. Another important idea is that if I have two K-graphs, I'll define what a K-graph is shortly, that a K-morph is something that you can put between two K-graphs to get a K plus 1 graph. So it increases the complexity of the graph by one dimension in the simplest possible way. Okay. So that you add edges of the new dimension, the K plus first dimension, and go from here to here. Okay. And the way to think about it, I like to think about things in by analogy with C-star algebras. And the way to think about what a K-morph is that if you think of these as C-star algebras, then this should correspond to a C-star correspondence. And in fact, there is a theorem. Once you've set everything up, the proof of the theorem is actually quite easy, that there is, in fact, a functorial relation between K-graphs with K-isomorphism classes of K-morphs as morphisms to the category of C-star algebras with isomorphism classes of correspondences as your morphisms. Unfortunately, it's contravariant. But I think that originally when people defined A-B correspondence as a morphism between A and B, I think that was probably wrong. And you can tell that it's probably wrong by the way you actually compose them. So if I have a correspondence, I have three C-star algebras and two correspondences from A to B. The normal way to think of this is as a correspondence from A to B and B to C. Then when you take the tensor product, what you get, you get a correspondence between A and K. That's not how you compose functions. You compose functions this way, right? So you should really think of it as a morphism from C to A. But that's not the standard way of doing things. So that's why it's going to be a controversy.
Can algebraic compose functions the other way?
What?
Can algebraic compose functions?
They're sick. No, but the real reason that she and I won't argue for changing it, because I think the convention for correspondences is correct, and the reason for that is because if I have a morphism, a C star morphism, an honest C star morphism from A to B, then you construct a correspondence from A to B, and that underlies why it's important not to change that, because you want to think of correspondences as somehow being generalized morphisms. Okay, so then the function is going to be constant.
All right, so let me start talking about definition.
So there is going to be a function. So there will be, there is a function from a category of K graphs with K morphs as your morphisms. To the category of C-star algebras with correspondences. And let me just say that a C-star correspondence is really a Hilbert bimodule. Just another word for it. Okay, so what is a K-graph? So, definition. Here, K is a natural number greater than or equal to zero. So, a K graph is countable, a non-empty category, small category, lambda. Together with a degree map from lambda to end of the K, satisfying the following action requirement, what's called the factorization property. With any luck, this will be the only G in the talk, so I'll keep my hopes and sense. And that is if for all lambda with degree lambda equals m plus n, there exists unique mu and nu in lambda such that lambda can be factorized as mu times nu, the degree of mu equals m and the degree of nu
equals
what? Does what include zero?
Range of the degree map includes things.
Yeah. N to the zero here is by definition zero.
So we're looking at zero an element of n.
Ah. Yes, N includes zero.
Yeah. Well, what you're calling it N zero?
I beg your pardon? What's that?
What is N zero?
N to the zero is zero
by definition.
That's
going to
be one.
So we could have allowed birds to have more fun if I had just not had an empty here. Okay, so there are a lot of consequences to this, and really what you should think of a K graph is, well, okay, let me talk about some examples. For K equals zero. Lambda simple set.
and the degree functor is of no interest. So there are no non-trivial morphisms. So for k equals 1, lambda is what you call is a path category. This is a motivating example of a directed graph. So what that means is that you have a set of vertices, a set of edges, and every element in lambda is either a vertex or an edge or some concatenation of edges. So, and the degree map, it just tells you how long the directed path is. The vertex has zero length, and an edge has length 1. Otherwise, you have this. Otherwise, you just have the length of the path. So the and that gives you the degree function. Easy to see that the factorization property satisfies. All right, and for k greater than or equal to 2, you think of this as k different graphs sharing a vertex set. But they can meet in some sense of different, so we have to give them different types of different. But this is a category, so you have to say what it means to compose two edges of different colors. And the important point is that there are a lot of commuting squares. There are very many. There's many commuting squares. So this gives the subject its flavor. And of course, with k equal to 3 or greater, there's a lot of commuting cubes, etc. Okay, so I'll try to. It follows from. Before I give you any examples, I mean, I guess you can imagine examples of graphs and sets. But in order to somehow get a feeling for what the factorization property says, observe that degree of a morphism, that the degree d of lambda equals 0 if and only if lambda is the identity on some object, for some object. So as a result of this, we identify the objects of the k-graph with the morphisms of degree n. We identify the objects of lambda with the morphisms of degree 0. So then in general, we set lambda to the n to be the inverse image of it. There are other structure maps also, the range map and the source map. So we will often assume, for the purposes of getting reasonable seats or algebras, that the range map from lambda to lambda naught will be surjective and finite to 1. And it's not quite absolutely necessary to do this, but it makes it a lot more convenient to define the C-star algebra associated to that. I kind of promised to give you examples of K-graphs. So the simplest would be a set. So that's, here you have set K equals 0. And for K equals 1, you might put some edges here. Okay, and for k equals 2, or you could have
could have something that looks like that. So the C-star algebra for this will be the 3x3 matrices over C of T, and the C-star algebra for this will be O2. Now for K equals 2, you could consider something like the same example here, but
the loop, have the loops have different colors.
And you have to say what happens when you compose two loops of a different color. The simplest, the only possible thing you could do here would be actually to have them commute in the appropriate sense. So if you take this loop and follow it by that loop, you get the same thing as if you take this loop and follow it by that loop. But if you were to add another loop of the blue color, then you could get more subtle commutation. So you could say that going along this loop and then following it by this loop is the same as going along this loop and following it by that loop. And the commutation rules become much more complicated when you add more loops of different colors. Okay. So another interesting example is just taking the Cartesian product. So if I take the Cartesian product of two one graphs, I can get a two graph pretty easily. Just by taking this, crossing it with that, making these edges orange and these edges blue. So there's lots of different ways of doing K-graphs. Now, how do I find the C-star algebra of the K-graph? Follows. And it's basically just the imitation of how one defines the C-star algebra of a one-graph, if you're familiar with that. So this condition here, what was it? The range map is finite to 1. This condition here I'll call star. So for K graph, and the satisfying star, we define star of lambda to be the universal C-star algebra generated by a collection of operators S of lambda, with lambda and lambda, satisfied the following axioms. So one is that the family S of B for B vertices form a set of orthogonal projections. Is a set of orthogonal projections. Two, if lambda and mu are composable, and that implies that F lambda mu is equal to F lambda times S mu. Okay. Three. So if we think of lambda as being, for every lambda and lambda, we think of that as a morphism from S of lambda to R of lambda. So remember, we've identified the objects in this category with the morphisms of degree 0, lambda is 0. So here, these are all going to be projections. So it makes sense to say that if I take an operator S lambda and take S lambda star S lambda, I want this to be a partial isometry, and I could just say that's going to be S of S lambda. I apologize for the overuse of the letter S. So this tells you at the same time that it's a partial isometry, that the domain projection is the operator that corresponds to the source of that, which is an S.
And the last axiom is basically the Kunz-Krieger requirement, and so the basic motivation is that originally came from Kunz-Krieger algebra, and that is that for each n in N to the K, for the Kunz-Krieger condition holds for every n and the and every vertex, we have that S of M, S of D is the sum of the range projections, S lambda star, where we sum over all morphisms of degree N, degree of lambda is N, which terminates in the vertex B, such that the range. Alright. So with this definition, this generalizes the definition of normal graph algebras, so that the graph algebra, here I've introduced K to zero. It's kind of silly to talk about this. We've not been interested in doing this before until it turned out that K norms were kind of an interesting thing. But the C star algebra for this set of points would just be C plus C plus C, so it would be C cubed. This would be the 3x3 matrices over C of T, this would be the Kunz algebra, and this would just be the tensor product of these two C star algebras.
Do they satisfy the condition spot?
Which?
All of
them. I think so, yeah.
But, the range map from lambda to lambda zero is finite to one.
Thank you. Good point. The whole point of that is to make the sum finite. And so you only really need that the range map is finite to one on morphisms of degree n. Where was that? Thank you. But this does not exhaust the class of examples. So, for example, you get up to Morita equivalence all AF algebras. And the way to get an AF algebra is if you have some kind of a Bradley diagram, you have to reverse the arrows, unfortunately. So, you might have something like this. It's exactly a Bradley diagram, but we did a silly thing of reversing the edges because we wanted to make it into a category. There's a Bradley here, too. So the C star algebra that you get for this graph turns out to be too big. It won't be exactly the AF algebra that corresponds to this particular Bradley diagram. But it'll be somehow Morita equivalent to it. And if you want to get the original C star algebra, you have to take the projection that corresponds to this point and the coordinate that corresponds to that projection. So, but otherwise, you get all AF algebras, and you get many AT algebras also. That is a result of joint work with several people, of which I was not a member. But it was quite an interesting paper. So for example, you should do the following. You could take, and I can't remember the color scheme, so you could take cycles of order 2 to the n, so here this is 4 vertices, and then stick in a few red edges. So here there was a single vertex. So this algebra is C of T. This is C of T tensor M2. This is C of T tensor M4. And then you throw in some vertical edges. Or some edges going just so this is quite a non-trivial example of a two graph. So here, the diagram continues, and it sort of challenges my artistic talent to continue it, so I won't.
But the important thing is that this is going to be a 2 graph that's going to be Morita equivalent to the Bunsen-Bennett algebra, corresponding to 2 infinity. And it's quite a subtle thing. It took a long time before this example was discovered. I think it was discovered by Aidan Coombs back then. And it was quite intriguing because I thought that it would be very difficult to come up with something like this. And you get many Kirchberg algebras. That's kind of also the important thing. Okay, so one of the things that we discovered was that it was hard to figure out how to get 3 graphs from 2 graphs or 1 graph from 2 graphs. So here, in some sense, these two examples are related, I think. So how do you get a 2 graph from this 1 graph? Or how do you get a 3 graph from a 2 graph? And the essential extra bit of structure that you need is this thing called a k-morph. And we had come up with lots of ad hoc procedures for pasting together k-graphs together k-plus 1 graph. One of which was to consider inductive limits. Okay, so here, if you were at Barcelona, I talked about coverings. So here, this is one possible way of putting together k-graphs. So 1 graph together 2 graphs. So here I have 2 1 graphs, and I can fit them together to get a 2 graph here by taking this covering. This 1 graph covers this 1 graph in a manner that's that imitates what topologists call the covering. I won't bother to define it. Similarly, this 2 1 graph covers this 1 graph. So I can put these two together into a 2 graph. Along with the red edges. And by pasting together all these different 2 graphs, I get a much bigger 2 graph, which is quite interesting. So, but you could also do the following. You could take, this is a covering because every vertex here maps onto this, and any path that goes through this point, you can lift any path uniquely that goes through this point up here. So it's an imitation of the path covering property of the overall covering. But suppose I were to have a cycle of length, say, 2 here, and then a cycle of length 3. And it turns out that I can construct a C star algebra.
Reverse an arrow.
Did I?
No,
so it turns out that I can actually put lots of arrows here, so that I can put an arrow from every vertex in this graph to a vertex in this graph, and there's essentially only one way of defining a 2 graph out of this. So this would go here. And this is pretty clearly not a covering. But there's a natural way of defining the computational relations that would give me a 2 graph. So what I want to understand is what it takes, given a 2 1 graphs, how to construct a 2 graph. What do I need? What kind of rules can I allow myself? And that leads to the definition of what a k-morph is. So let me just quickly define what a k-morph is. I'm almost done with the talk. I haven't gotten to what I'm going to talk about here. Why I am now. So the definition goes as follows. So definition given k-graphs. A lambda gamma k-morph, or a k-morph for short, is a set X together with various maps, and there's a range in source map, so there's a map all from X to lambda naughts, another map from S from X to gamma naught. So you think of the set is being fibered over both the collections of objects here. So that means you think of it as arrows going from elements in X, gamma naught to elements in lambda naught. And a bijection phi from gamma star X lambda star Y. So these, there's two maps. I take the range map sourced over Y. I wanted things to be different. So the idea is that both of these maps are fibered over gamma knots, this on the right and this on the left, and both of these are fibered over lambda knot, this on the left and this on the right. Okay? So there should be a bijection that satisfies, such that the following condition is satisfied, if phi of x comma x1 comma gamma 1 is equal to lambda 1 comma x2, then the domain and the source of these have to be preserved, and the degree of these morphisms have to be preserved. These are both K graphs, so the degree maps into the same end of the K. So first of all, we have the degree of gamma 1 is equal to the degree of lambda 1, and the source of x1 is equal to the source of lambda 1. Is that right? And because these are both going to be in lambda knots, and the range of, oh no, that's not the source. The source is on the other side, so that should be the range. And the source of gamma 1 should be the same as the source of x2. But we have to be able to define operational compositions. So furthermore, if, and I want to make sure I get this right, if phi of x2 gamma 2 is equal to lambda 2 x3, then that means that, remember where x2 came from. X2 came from here. Then phi of x1 gamma 1 gamma 2 is going to be equal to, so what this says, in order to commute gamma 1 and gamma 2 past x1, you go through both of these, and you end up with x3 on this side, and lambda 2 on that side. X3 lambda 1 lambda 2. Does that look right, Aiden? Alright. Alright, so the basic idea is what you want to do is to construct the linking graph. So this data is precisely what you need. A linking graph, as in, say this example here. So the one morph here would be these red edges, and these various rules would tell you how you commute things. So here you take a blue followed by the red, which is the same as the red followed by this blue. So it's exactly what you need. Find a linking graph k plus 1 graph sigma that has the property that so that the two K graphs, lambda disjoint union gamma, sit inside as the K graph self skeleton sigma, and so that the elements of degree sigma to the elements of degree e sub k plus 1
are exactly x.
And of course, the source of every one of these sources in the range maps are precisely the things that are given with this data here. And that doesn't tell you what the entire structure is, but it tells you enough of the structure so that things become clear. So under mild hypotheses, if we assume that lambda and gamma satisfy the requirements of satisfy the star axiom, and moreover, if we in addition assume that the range in the source maps on X are surjective, and R is from X to lambda naught finite to 1, we get a Hilbert module, a C-star correspondence. So it would be a C-star of lambda, C-star of gamma correspondence as follows. So the whole point of having the looking graph is that does all the work for you. So the first thing that you do is you observe that, so we construct C star of sigma, and observe that the inclusions from lambda and gamma individually into sigma inducing embeddings. That we have embeddings of iota sub lambda from C star of lambda into C star of sigma, and I sub gamma from C star of gamma into C star of sigma. Moreover, this is sigma unit. If you add these two together, the map from the direct sum of these two into there is actually sigma unit. They have disjoint ranges, and they sort of sit inside in this way. So here you have C star of lambda and C star of gamma. So there is a projection. So if I look at the image of an approximate unit for gamma, that's a projection in the multiplier element. So there are projections. Projections T sub lambda and T sub gamma in the multiplier algebra of T star of sigma. So to say that they're complementary is that they're orthogonal and they add up to 1, and they're given as follows, given by taking T of lambda, you just sum up. You take the sum over all the projections that correspond to the vertices in lambda naught. So V of lambda naught, I of where we have I sub lambda of SV. So this sum converges strictly to a projection. and P sub gamma is going to be the similar sum in gamma naughts. I sub gamma. Okay, and how do I define the Hilbert module? So we set H of X. And that's a nice thing about having all this structure is we take the C star algebra of sigma and just multiply on the left by multiply on the left by P sub lambda and on the right by P sub gamma. P sub lambda, C star algebra sigma, and P sub gamma. So it follows, it's not hard to see, so it follows that they're full projections, and if I take this corner here, the corner that corresponds to P gamma, this corner is actually equal to the range of, it's not hard to see, is equal to the range of I of gamma. I gamma, the other corner is not going to be isomorphic to the range of I lambda. It follows that since this is true, H of X is a full, may be regarded as full Hilbert module, C star Hilbert module, over C star of gamma. And it's equipped, naturally equipped with the map into the adjoinable operators on the left from C star of lambda with a function phi and it's not hard to see actually that the map not only goes into the adjoinable operators but under the hypotheses that we've made it actually goes into the compacts. Into the compact sense. So not only do we have a C-star correspondence, but we have one of a very special kind. It's particularly nice. So the last thing I want to say is kind of what I tried to tell you a little bit earlier. And that is that. So if we restrict, so if I take M sub K to be the category of K graphs and K norms. Isomorphism classes. I'm satisfying the condition star. And there was a condition both on the K-graph and the K-mods. And if I take C to be the category of C-star algebras, and correspondences and isomorphism classes, correspondences. So it's annoying that we have to worry about isomorphism classes, but otherwise you'd be dealing with a bi-category rather than a category. Then this construction, then we get a functor. M sub K star to C such that graphs gamma get mapped to their C star algebra and K morphs gamma lambda K morphs, and this is a contravariant function. And X
gets mapped to the isomorphism. The isomorphism class of X gets mapped to the isomorphism class of H and X.
The paper that we have now is already longer than we care to deal with. So, but this is kind of the juicy, interesting example. The other examples are also very interesting. George?
When you said if you get some ATO, release some ATO, are there any that you know you don't get?
I don't think so. I wasn't a co-author in that paper. It's a very interesting paper, but. So, Aiden, do you know?
Well, with that construction, maybe something like the rank of K1 has to be the same as something K1. There is a restriction. I think K1 has to be a subgroup of K1 with a proportional proportion or some proportion.
Mike?
Okay.